The Royal New Zealand College of GPs held its annual conference at the Langham Hotel in Auckland from the 29th to the 31st of July. More than 720 delegates attended, which is a record turnout for the college. My name is Cliff Taylor, and I caught up with College President Tim Molloy just after his opening address, in which he challenged Health Minister Jonathan Coleman to review the funding system for the entire health sector. I started by asking Dr. Molloy for his reaction to the record number attending the conference.
Yeah, well, it's caught me on the hop a little bit in the sense that I'm incredibly pleasantly surprised. As I said in my opening address, the thing which concerns me is that we're about to outgrow the Langham at that kind of size. What it says is that there is still a significant interest in particularly a good quality conference, a conference that talks about issues specific to general practice and particularly New Zealand general practice. That is in the domain of the college, particularly the issues of workforce and equity, the issues around training, the quality agendas that we're talking about. And in that sense, I think it's quite reassuring that we are as well supported as we are. I think Auckland has done themselves proud in the sense that the Auckland faculty have put together a really good program, and everybody that I've spoken to so far have said that, commented on the quality of the program, and I think that speaks volumes. Whether Auckland is something that's attractive for other people to come from other parts of the country too or not, as an Aucklander, I wouldn't have thought so. But
I think, yeah, there were various comments about the traffic people jumping
yeah,
in
here exactly.
this morning.
Traffic and the weather.
Including the minister, yeah. You spoke this morning, the theme of your address was about the new age of generalism, which is a phrase I haven't come across before. Could you just expand on that a little bit?
I guess that's a reference to the place of the generalist in the health system. There's certainly a movement, which I would argue is almost certainly a worldwide movement, to reinforce the importance of the generalist's approach to healthcare as being fundamental to both cost and effectiveness of the delivery of health systems worldwide. New Zealand is no exception to that. When I spoke to my British colleague last night, who's here to give one of the keynotes, the fact that we, in the 1980s, made up 50% of the medical workforce, which unfortunately has now dropped down to 40%, was something that completely stunned him, that we could have such a generalist base to our whole of our health system. And I said, well, that's where our aspiration is, to get back to that level, because we know that in an economy which is always somewhat more compromised, that's the only way that we can deliver a cost-effective system.
So do you see it as returning to an age of generalism then?
I certainly do. We have had a lost generation of general practitioners. We've talked about that in the past, there was a time when general practice was an incredibly important part of the workforce, and then for 30-odd years we failed to train to meet that gap, and we lost this generation of GPs. So now we have this sort of biphasic cohort of elderly and young and nothing in the middle. The result is that the system became super specialised in the interim, and that attracted a lot of the medical graduates into the specialist pathways. What we're saying is, for the system to be to deliver on the threats of the population growth, the ageing population, and all the comorbidities that we're now confronting, we do need our generalists back again as the sort of the building block of the system as a whole.
I hear some people in the sector try to push the idea of general practice or generalism as a specialty. Is that the way you look at it? Should it be treated as another specialty?
This is not a should we be. We are a specialty. We are the specialty of general practice. We are vocationally registered in general practice. That is not a debate to be had any longer. So the answer is yes, general practice is a specialty.
There still seems to be this situation where GPs are compared to specialists.
Not by me. It's the other way around. I like to compare my specialist colleagues against our particular specialty and see whether they measure up.
The things that you mentioned also this morning about the New Zealand health strategy, the closer to home, those kind of things. Are you feeling that the environment is now more conducive to seeing that age of generalism prosper?
I think strategically it is, and that's what the strategy says. What I now want is to see that strategy turned into pragmatic reality. And implementation is what New Zealand health systems have failed on multiple occasions. And what I'm asking is that we don't fail this time, that we look at this health strategy and we take it literally and we implement a process with the right levers to make it actually happen. The right levers are the conversation around the way we fund our systems. It's not okay just to have a strategic position and not pull levers to make it happen.
At the GPCME in Rotorua recently, Stephen Child...
What's that?
I'm sure you know. Stephen Child from the NZMA, he spoke about international medical graduates, IMGs, and he mentioned that New Zealand has the highest level of IMGs in the world. I knew it was high, I didn't realise it was the highest. Can I ask you, firstly, why is that, and will that continue to be the case?
So when I talk about that lost generation of trainees, people entering general practice, the way that the country compensated for the fact that we weren't getting them from New Zealand is we imported them from overseas. So we've had, year on year, somewhere between 60 and 70% of our general practice workforce had a base degree from another country. Well, you do that year on year, you're going to accumulate a significant number of people who are international medical graduates. I would argue that I personally am incredibly grateful to the rest of the world that our health system was propped up by the trainees from everywhere else. Of those 60 to 70%, historically, majority, which is 60% of them, came from the United Kingdom. And the rest came from other parts of the world and continue to do so. Frankly, without them, there would have been no health system in New Zealand. But the net result is that we now have the gap filled by international medical graduates. I personally have felt that that's probably enriched our system to some extent, but it's not fair on the rest of the world for us to, draw upon their resources forever. And that's led to the decision quite a number of years ago now to increase the number of graduates in our medical schools. And we're seeing the results of those now with up to 565 people graduating out of the two universities each year now, which is a seriously significant leap from, it's nearly double what it was even 5 or 6 years ago.
And lastly, over the last few weeks and months, the issue of VLCA has it's always been there, but it's kind of exploded. And it's expanded to cover basically all of primary care funding. There's a lot of dissatisfaction out there. The minister comes to these events and basically doesn't seem to recognise it, or he won't move from his position. Are you frustrated with that? Are you going to keep pushing that message?
Oh, absolutely. To be frank, I do understand the minister's position. I do know that with issues like VLCA, that in a political sense, you get winners and losers if you tinker with it. Which is why the college is saying, let's talk about the whole envelope rather than just the VLCA component of that envelope. Let's talk about whether there really should be more, a greater contribution to the primary care funding pool as a whole. Let's talk about getting a scenario that provides winners in terms of the funding access barrier, and therefore doesn't place the incumbents or the government in a position of losers. And there are ways to do this, but the bottom line is it does cost money. And I would argue that the net result is that if the state wishes to maintain the value of its investment in primary care, which has slowly been eroded over time, then it is going to have to look at whether that envelope is sufficient. And while I know the absolute numbers that the minister quotes, I would argue that in fact, proportionately, relative to the value of that initial investment in the order of 10 years ago, there has been an erosion. And therefore, for us to not, to just maintain the status quo, let alone grow our capability as he would have us do under the strategy of closer to home, then he's going to have to look at what that investment looks like, and it is going to have to grow it. Whether he grows it from within the health system, i.e. shifts funding from DHBs to primary care, or whether it's the total envelope itself, is only a decision that Cabinet can make, and Treasury, obviously, with Treasury advice. But that's the pressure that I would like to place on the Minister to say, actually, it's time to grow this investment. So that we're not having conversations around winners and losers in a political environment. So we're actually having conversations about winners and winners in terms of how the public's ability to access healthcare in a financially constrained environment where need is the driver.
That was College President Tim Molloy talking to me, Cliff Taylor, for New Zealand Doctor.